I have a buddy from my undergraduate days who still lives in Guelph, and I usually see him pretty much every year, if not more. But I haven't lived there in 15 years. It's been about 15 years since I left Guelph. And we both have families now, lives beyond who we were when we used to hang out many times in a week. In many ways, we've grown up. But still, when we get together, I often find myself slipping into old patterns of speech, old ways of relating, and even old ways of thinking. Sometimes it's hard to break out of who we've been, and I don't know if it's me or him or just the ease of habits and patterns that we spent many years creating that causes this. I suspect if I ever did slip too far out of them, he would probably ask himself quietly, isn't this Tim who I used to be on a pool team with? Or isn't this Tim who I used to play Ultimate Aerobie with, which is aerobie. You seen how far aerobies fly? We used to play Ultimate with those, but full contact. Play Ultimate Aerobie with, or isn't this Tim who inaugurated the summer of Tim, which was an amazing summer. And he would wonder about who this person was he was speaking to. I don't imagine it was easy for Jesus to come home. He's been out in the world, not far by our standards, maybe only tens of miles away from home. But he's been out in the world. He's been to small Jewish towns and to large Greek ones. And in that time, the world itself has turned and shifted in his hands. Even the great powers of the universe seem to obey his command. But when he comes home, who do people see? The man who casts out demons? The man who goes toe-to-toe with the teachers of the law? The man who raises the dead? No, they just see him as the kid they knew. They see him as the carpenter. They know his family, they know his mom, they know his sisters and brothers. And suddenly he comes back to town and he's what? Different? No. We know him. It's even hard for Jesus to break out of who he once was. I know as much as I love going home, I find it difficult as well. At home we have patterns. At home we have dynamics. At home, we have ways we interact with people, habits we all have come together with, habits our families create together, and systems over many years of continued use. I remember coming back from my time in El Salvador. It was a big experience that changed me, and one that had a profound effect on my view of the world and my theology. I've often referred to it as my conversion to Christianity, despite it happening after I'd already started seminary. I remember coming back from it, and relating to my family was especially hard. I was angry and disenfranchised and trying to figure out an ordering of the world. And my family, well, they saw me in a different light. They still saw me as the person I was before I went. In many ways, they still saw me as a child. And it led to a period in my life with some distance between me and my family. And it wasn't just El Salvador. It's when I was in seminary and learning all sorts of new stuff there and trying to figure out who I was with this creation and who I was as a minister. All of my assumptions of my life were being tested, and my worldview was becoming cloudy. Now, that's not to say that the light my family saw me in was wrong. Family can't be blamed for seeing someone the way they've always seen them. Just like my buddy in Guelph can't be blamed for seeing me the way he's always seen me, and I can't be blamed for seeing him the way I've always seen him. It goes both ways. I I don't imagine my views of people are so easy to change, especially if I've known them for years. So the way the people of presumably Nazareth saw Jesus, it wasn't wrong. They weren't wrong to say, hey, it's Jesus the carpenter, or hey, it's Jesus, son of Mary, or hey, it's Jesus who we've known for years and years and years. The issue is that it was incomplete. As we grow and mature, our understanding of who we are grows with us, and it encompasses more and more than any particular moment in time. And that can be really hard for people to grasp, especially people that are close to us. It can shift the very nature of our relationships if we change too much, and that's really unsettling for everyone involved. And so when Jesus arrives home and everyone recognizes him, they aren't wrong about what they say. It's just that Jesus doesn't fit into the small box that they have for him. Just like I don't fit into the small box anyone has for me, whether that's friends or family, and just like you don't fit into any small box that anyone has for you. Now, I think we still do this with Jesus. I think as Christians, we are like his family in many ways, and so we see him in a specific way, and it's hard for him to break out of that, even with us. You know, whenever we come to a passage in a Bible, we tend to read it however our experience of Jesus in our lives has taught us to read it. Jesus said that? Oh, but he's such a nice man. So if we read something that doesn't fit our experience of Jesus, our understanding of him, if we read it and he doesn't fit into the box we've assigned him, we say to ourselves, yeah, wait a minute, isn't this Jesus who was Mary's son? Isn't he the carpenter? Isn't he whatever we like to ascribe to him? To put him back into that box that we want to put him in. Right after this passage of coming home, we have a story of Jesus that I find quite unsettling, to be honest with you. A pretty powerful challenge to my small L liberal interpretation of the teachings of Jesus. Jesus is speaking to his closest followers, and he's telling them to go out into the world and to be disciples, and he's explaining a little bit about what that means to be a disciple. And there's something pretty surprising about it. Go out into the world and take nothing for your journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money in your belts. Wear sandals and don't bring any extra clothes. And wherever you go and enter a house, stay there until you leave. We've heard this a bunch of times. But the liberal understanding of discipleship is pretty different from this. We might look at discipleship as go into the world and feed the hungry, clothe the naked, give shelters to the sojourner. But that's not how Jesus sees discipleship. He says to his disciples, you want to be my disciples? You go into the world and you don't feed the hungry. Be the hungry. Don't clothe the naked. Be the naked. Don't give shelter to the wanderer. Be the wanderer. Now, I don't want to delve too deeply into what this means because we'll talk more about it in a couple of weeks when we talk about the rich man. But suddenly, discipleship sounds a lot less appealing to my liberal sensibilities. Now, this isn't to say Jesus doesn't want you to feed the hungry or clothe the naked and provide shelter for the wanderer. Of course he does. But we shouldn't keep him in that box simply because it's safer for us to do so. I think we need to hear the challenge of who Jesus is and what he says and really struggle with it. Because it's not hard to sanitize or domesticate Jesus. And when we do, there are consequences. Mark emphasizes that Jesus couldn't really do any miracles there. He could only heal a few people. And Matthew takes it a step further in his version of the story and says that Jesus couldn't do anything at all. When we domesticate Jesus to our views, to our preconceived notions, he loses all his power. And when we relate to people where the ruts of patterns are so deep that we struggle to get out of them, we cannot bring the fullness of our power and our authority to bear. All the experience we've gained in life, all the authority we've acquired from living, the joy and pain that we've experienced, are in danger of becoming mollified and being tempered. The fullness of ourselves often struggles to bring forth the gifts that we can offer. I think of a tree. And as it grows, new branches bring forth tremendous fruit. But imagine those who might care for the tree, those who have known the tree, that they're unable to share in that because they can't see the branches. It's kind of a weird metaphor, but they're just not looking. The branches are there, but they're just not looking. Or the tree is hiding them. That's just as much a possibility, too. But so much goes to waste. Now, this doesn't mean cast your families aside, because we need them. We need sometimes to be held as the child. We need that part of ourselves to be cared for and cherished by whoever those people are that we might call home. Just like it's our responsibility to care for and cherish those parts of the people that we recognize, even if we can't see the fullness of who they are. I need that part of myself, that silly, immature young man from Guelph, who still resides in me, by the way, to be cherished by my good friend in Guelph. That's important for me. That's important for my own development. But there is attention there. And I see it as one of the great challenges of life. It's one of the great challenges of and to growing up. How do we help the fullness of who we are bring forth our gifts into the world? How do we let our branches unfurl to share the bounty that all of us have to offer with everyone? And I think of it in this story of Christ, in this story of him trying to reach out and unfurl and share his branches, share the fruit that he has to offer. And I think of our own experience of encountering Christ in our own lives. And I ask, how do we encounter a Christ that goes beyond the small box that we put him into? How do we look upon the tree of Christ and see branches reaching to places that we had no idea of? And know that the fruit there is life-giving and good. These are big questions. Questions that we ask of ourselves. Questions that we ask about those we love and we see in a certain way. And questions we ask about God. Thanks be to God. Amen.